Good morning and welcome to Wanda's Picks, a Black Arts and Culture program of the African Sisters Media Network. We're getting started a little bit late today, but I want to share with you the wonderful experience I had yesterday evening when the San Francisco Oakland portion of the Bay Bridge opened for pedestrian and cyclists. It was a fantastic experience. It was so lovely looking out across the bay. Oh, my goodness, at the old bridge, at Yerba Buena Island, Treasure Island, which we couldn't go to yet. And it was just so fun. The bridge is beautiful. So I encourage everyone to get out on the path and take the jaunt. It was really fun. I think it was like 2.4 miles on the bridge, and it's all uphill, a slight incline. However, when you go back down the hill, it's just really fun because you're flying, not flying literally, but you're going down the hill. Really, it's really fun. But it was really great. It's very, very nice. The new span. It was quite lovely. So another, and also the Bay Trail that's another link to the Bay Trail. So the proposal is for us to be able to ride to Treasure Island by 2015. So that's it's about 2 years from now. And who knows, it might go a little faster, but it might just take as long as it took. So it was quite fun. And I'm thinking sort of in honor of that, that I'm going to play an interview I had with a cyclist who was talking about the National Cyclist Conference, Black Cyclist Conference, and about 2 years ago now, in August 4th. I'm going to play that. And looking forward to another edition of Wanda Sticks on Friday at 8 o'clock Pacific time.
Okay, so I have on the air Anthony Taylor, who is Vice President of the National Brotherhood of Cyclists, and we're going to be talking about this 2011 conference that's occurring here in Oakland, California. And also on the air we have we have Nelson Vales, Olympic silver medalist, and I want to let I'm going to let you tell us about the importance of Nelson Vales in sort of the whole genre of biking, not just in the African American community, but also as a nation. Like what happened when he got that silver medal in 1984? What did that do for cycling?
Well, Wanda, thank you very much. It's really exciting to be on the show. And it's exciting to be on the show with Nelson, actually. He is someone that I point to has really influenced me. But I think the important thing is really we have to link back to 1984. And because now we in some ways act like cycling has always been there because we point to Lance, you know what I mean, the Lance phenomena. But before Greg LeMond, before Lance, there was actually Nelson Vales. And Nelson Vales, winning that gold medal in 1984, first African-American cyclist to medal in cycling, became an international ambassador for our country around cycling. And the fact that from that experience came a movie, Quicksilver, which no one probably now remembers who is new to cycling, but it was the first movie actually built around a cyclist and the story of cycling. And it was a story of bike messengers in New York. And again, Nelson was part of a really seminal moment in bike history where the community of black cyclists in New York, in the messenger community, using fixed gear bikes, really built a whole culture that we now finally see manifesting itself in all these ways. And that's the cool thing to do now is kids are buying fixed gear bikes and no brakes and all these things. But most importantly, really was a seed for, I think, what we now experience as the new golden age of cycling. And he is, and he is, he really has been quietly involved in the community, supporting everyone from that we know in terms of authors, people in media, and people in the industry. And so I'll let Nelson tell his story over the last 20 plus years himself, but really has been an amazing ambassador. And more importantly, I think what everyone says that's really amazing is that he has always been the same great person. His new commitment to the National Brotherhood of Cyclists and his new commitment to increased participation of the youth and the African-American community in cycling right on time is exactly what we need to make this a great move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you, your nickname, is your nickname still Cheetah?
Yep, it sure is. Hey, thank you again, Wanda, for having me on your show, and thank you for the kind words, Anthony. It's very nice of you. And I am happy to be part of this movement, and like Anthony had mentioned, I've always been there. I've just been behind the curtains, per se, and helping small entities of different organizations and groups along the way between work and my world travel still. But at the same time, I am so proud to be part of this organization and to be a guest at this 2011 event here in Oakland. And I look forward to a great show. So if anyone else out there listening is able to come by, we'll be a couple of seminars is going to take place. And I'm not sure if there's late registration involved or anything like that. But, you know, at least I'll be around to shake hands and speak to people and answer questions on behalf of the group, why the group is out for their bike rides.
Right. Yeah, you're going to be giving a talk. You're going to be, it's called Nelson Unveiled, Life in the Fast Lane, America's First Ambassador of Cycling, is the title of your speech on Saturday night at the Marriott in Oakland, which is the, I guess that's where all most of the activities are going to be taking place, but not all of them. And perhaps you could tell us, Anthony, you know, sort of where else the events are going to take place, and tell us, you know, sort of about some of the free events and the bicycle rides and clinics and whatever else you all have planned for the conference August 4th through 7th here in Oakland.
Yeah, sure can. Well, the Friday itself, it really, again, will be is at the Marriott, and a lot of that morning is really informational. So we'll actually, we have a an orthopedic specialist who's going to be speaking, he's coming up from San Diego, and speaking on health and how to maintain health and improve health using cycling. And I think one of the things that's happened nationally as well is that as we are looking at health improvement in communities of color, we've begun to look at the idea of what kind of activities can we engage in that are part of a lifestyle that will have residual benefits for families and communities, and biking is actually at the center of that. And so it's actually really exciting. There are a number of those programs. So this idea of health improvement, engagement, maintenance with the bike as a strategy for obesity prevention and anti-aging is something that's going to be exciting. It's going to be a great speech. After that, we're doing that later that morning, we're doing a youth a seminar on youth in cycling. And we're going to have a number of people from Atlanta. We have from, they're coming from Atlanta, from California, and I was in Minneapolis, and they're going to be talking about different types of programs to engage youth and what creates successful youth programs around cycling. So it's a great, for anyone who's working with kids will get things out of that particular session. There's also a session on how to start a bike club. One of the most exciting sessions, I think, that will be really interesting is women in cycling. Mm-hmm. And women are a really important part of this movement as well. So that will be a really nice one because they're going to be very specific on how women, the benefits for women, how what things matter to help women have a more successful cycling experience. And immediately after that, they're going to follow that with a ride specifically for women in the Bay Area. And while that's going on, there'll be another ride going on. And throughout the day, again, as Nelson said, he'll actually be available at this session to meet, greet, and sign and talk to people. And then Saturday morning, there'll be a big ride where we'll be actually going to, excuse me, it'll be from Marin, I'll be in Marin, but I think it's Tiburon to, it's the Marin Tiburon area, and I think we'll be doing some climbing there, and that's going to be a fun ride. Mm-hmm. and then Friday evening, we'll be at Anamosa's, and there will be a, that's what we'll be doing, a presentation, an awards ceremony, mm-hmm. and then, of course, a great social evening. And you can also get tickets for that event, just for those pieces of the event. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the best information is really to look at the pieces that make sense for you. Mm-hmm. Sunday morning, we're actually, which I think is really exciting, is we're doing a brunch. It's solely vegan. And Angela Davis is going to speak to the delegation.
Nice.
And I really think it's an interesting bookend between Nelson Vales and Angela Davis in terms
mm-hmm.
of, and I always consider her one of the original advocates, you know what I mean? Someone who has been very clear about social justice. And the new movement in terms of urban democracy is really built around transportation. And in the middle of that discussion is the bicycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I was wondering, Mr. Vales, if you could talk about, and also I wanted to mention that in, I guess, November 7, 2009, you were inducted into the U.S. Bicycling Hall of Fame. And who knew there was a U.S. Bicycling Hall of Fame? And in your in the bio that Anthony sent me, it says that you came from a poor and underdeveloped neighborhood in Harlem, and through hard work and determination, you broke into what was once seen as a middle-class white man's sport. And I didn't know that either, because, you know, in Africa, people are on bicycles. So it's like, wow, that's interesting. You know, that here in America, that is seen as a sport as opposed to transportation, because I commuted to work in West Oakland from, you know, and people would tell me, girl, you need to get on the sidewalk. You know, you're going to get hit by a car. This is before we had all these wonderful bike lanes in Oakland. And when it's really interesting, one of my neighbors, his name is Nathaniel Kilgore, and he passed, but he would, oh, my God, he just really looked like the epitome of a biker. I mean, from, you know, the clothes that he wore, you know, the biking clothes, as well as, you know, how he made sure that he had, you know, fluorescent tape and all of the, you know, everything that he needed to have to make sure that his bike was safe. And he would ride through West Oakland and ride areas of Oakland and also the Bay Area where there were black kids that could see him on his bike, because riding bikes wasn't necessarily cool. And I would do the same thing. And now I live in East Oakland, because we couldn't afford a house in West Oakland. and it's really interesting. No one rides. I never see the critical mass coming my way. They stop, like, before they get to deep East Oakland, because I live, like, in the hood. And they go to Alameda, and I'm like, you know, folks, we got the Bay Trail down here and all this other stuff. So hopefully what I'm looking to happen is that folks will start riding in my neighborhood, and I'll have company. Because it's so, I mean, like, I can't ride by myself a lot of times after a certain time, because no one will be walking, and something happened, no one will be able to find me. Because, you know, the Bay Trails are really lovely, but they're isolated and they're dark when it gets to, you know, when it's, you know, the sun goes down. And so, yeah, and I laugh and I say, well, you know, why don't you ride, like, past High Street, you know, and then you could pick up my folks. It'd be great to see a critical mass of black folks on bike coming down International. That would be so cool during rush hour. That would, like, really make a strong impression, I think, on not just young people, but older people, too. So anyway, but back to my initial question, Mr. Vales, I wanted you to talk about sort of, you know, being a black man on a bike. I just think that's so cool.
Well, you know, some 40 years ago, I guess it would have been, growing up in Harlem, you know, I've always had a bicycle, and I mm-hmm. think a lot of kids still today on Christmas, they still get a bicycle, whether it's a BMX or a mountain bike nowadays. But mm-hmm. I was part of an era where all the kids had bicycles in the neighborhood, and I had Central Park as my playground. It was only a quarter mile away, and so when the kids would leave the neighborhood, we at least had Central Park. Nowadays, they have bike trails, and they have some parks as well for some use. And it's just a matter of finding those entities at various for use to be able to go and hang out and play. But it was our form of transportation, and Anthony and I talked about this earlier, of how we're going to get the youth today to use it as their form of transportation to get to their friend's house or, you know, and not so much video games, but if they're going to go somewhere to play a video game, they're going to ride their bike to their friend's house, things like that. And with me having Central Park in my backyard, per se, I was able to do laps, I was able to meet up with some of the cycling core type of groups and ride along, invited, uninvited. But during that time of recognizing that this is fun for me, Central Park had several bicycle clubs and entities that I was able to just ride along, you know, get invited to ride along. So a lot of it came with right place, right time, right people, and was able to become a member of a club, eventually became sponsored by Bicycle Shop. And in layman's terms for the listeners out there, you know, I was a young Harry Potter with a magic wand, and then I began to learn to use it. And that's the best way I can describe it. And one thing led to another to where once I realized if I train, I could be good at this. And with my family being a baby of 10 growing up in Harlem, I had a lot of family support and I had a lot of guidance steering me away from the trouble and some of the youth that were getting in trouble to be able to use that energy into sport. And again, this was a non-league sport that I'm participating in, so this was totally foreign in Harlem for, you know, a young black man to start racing bicycles, but there was plenty of us doing it. It's just that out of my group and my era, I was the one to excel. And still, through Facebook, I'm still in touch with all my friends that we all started racing together when we were kids. It was nice that they were to live vicariously through me and my world and Olympic years to watch me accelerate, you know. So I was that one special someone that took my talent to a different level.
Right, yeah, and you raced in a lot of different countries, and I was wondering, like, do you see yourself in these races? You know, because when you, you know, you received the silver medal at the 1984 Olympics, you know, that was a first, and you know, you're representing, you know, our country, but you're also representing in our community, and I'm wondering, over the years since, you know, that, you know, when you were racing professionally, 1988 to 1994, did you see yourself? Do you see other people of African descent, you know, not necessarily American, but Pan-African, on the trails and, you know, on the mountains and wherever you were racing? Did you see yourself?
Good question for you. That's one of the first in a while. Most of the black cyclists, per se, or Haitian, were all out of the out of France, you know, the Parisians, and that's why I had a big following. I had a big following and a bunch of fans, the Aborigines out of Australia, you know, things like that. So, you know, and I'm going from one side of the world to the other, mind you, but that's where I had a major following when I would come to those cities and those countries to race. But as far as me being the only, I never looked at it that way, but after a while, it became a business tool, such as what Major Taylor was. It became my business because not only was I the only African American or the only black cyclist, but you know, I was probably the nation's national champion. I spoke the language very little, but I was able to get by, and that's respectful to the different cultures and the different countries you travel to. And I was landing contracts everywhere I went to be able to come and race because I brought a smile. I didn't come with trouble. I raced to win. Sometimes I lose, but at the same time, the people was enjoying me enjoying myself as I traveled and raced in their cities and their countries. And but I never looked at it as a black-white thing, and something that you're probably going to learn and you'll see in the videotape I'll show you on Friday, Anthony, is that, you know, for a kid growing up in Harlem, one of my journeys was I had a flat in East Germany. I lived in the city of Leipzig, which when the wall was up during the 90s, I got there in 91, the wall came down, the wall came down in 91-ish, and I had a flat. But I would pick up a car, let's say, in Munich with BMW, which was one of my sponsors, and drive it through Austria, up through Czechoslovakia, which, again, was back then the East, and then through Germany, the eastern part of Germany, to get home to my flat and rest for a couple of days before I head back out to go to another bike race. But, you know, the border control thought it was very strange, you know, that you had this American black person that wasn't in the military to be going to this country and you live here kind of thing, and this car is new and the papers are correct and we can't hold you for anything, you know, we got to let you go. And then after a while, they started seeing me in the sports page and the sports magazines, stuff like that. So it became routine after a while, like, hey, here he is. This is the guy I told you about. But these are nice stories that will come out in a book someday that I'll sit down with a gentleman, Andrew Ritchie, and write, you know, of my life and world travels as a black man in this world, you know, getting around and getting along with everyone.
Right.
I never had trouble. I never had any racial issues, any trouble anywhere I went around the world. I was accepted, always the key to the city in any city, any country I went to.
Yeah, and that, you know, and what came to mind is also safety, because I think about, I have a friend who rides his bike here in Oakland, and one evening on a Saturday, he told me that someone had robbed him on his bike, and I was like, wow. And he was riding through an area of Oakland that's really populated, and, you know, there are no bike lanes, so it's really crowded. You have to be really careful, you know, when riding. I don't know if he was on the sidewalk or in the street, but but they pushed him over, took his bag, and so after that happened, I think about sort of, you know, who's around me when I'm riding, and also, I'm leery of dogs. And, you know, you can have all these different things like pepper spray or whatever, but that doesn't help you when you're on your bike and a dog is chasing you. And I was wondering if in any of not symposiums, but any of these breakout talks, are people going to be talking about, like, how to be safe as you ride? Because we want to talk, you know, we want to encourage people to get on their bikes and leave their cars at home if they have one, you know, because it's better for our environment. It's, you know, I mean, health is really important for our health, but it's also better for our environment, but you have to be safe.
Right. Well, I think all of them will probably address safety in some regards.
Okay.
And really when you look at the ones, particularly around youth and women, and you're looking at vulnerability, I mean, those are ones we really want to create safety for.
Mm-hmm.
And I think much of the of what we're doing, and I think around transportation, and Oakland is a very good example of a city where you can actually bike and get around. But what we're also really emphasizing is safety in terms of how you ride. And I think that's one of the things that for you, you've been doing this a long time, Wanda, so it's old hat to you, and you've learned it. But in the last couple of years, with gas prices going up, you get people motivated to try using a bike for transportation.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is they haven't been on a bike in a very long time. And so their skills on the road are not there. Their understanding of how to be safe on the road is not there. So one of the things that people should be looking for and we will have a number of these at the conference, and they'll be helping with the ride, are LEED-certified instructors. There actually are programs where people can go through an introduction to how to be a good bike handler. It's so funny that people don't really think about that, but there are skills that you have to have to be a good commuter, and how to use your bike and how to stop properly. So there's lots of things to it. They're simple, but again, often overlooked. And then how to make yourself visible and predictable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are the two words that really come to mind when I think about how we increase our safety, is when we become predictable, as in many of us begin to do the same things on the road, we actually increase safety.
Mm-hmm.
We absolutely increase safety.
Wow, I didn't know there was, you could get
a... Very well worded.
Oh, nice. LEED certified instructor.
Yeah, there are many programs, and you can look in your community. Most communities will have either on your your bike advocacy community site.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know, like, you guys got the East Bay Bike Coalition, I believe.
Right, we do. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so for example, if you check their website or send them information, they will be able to turn you on to LEED certified programs and LEED certified instructors, and they actually are basically a how to be safe 101. I mean, they teach people how to brake properly and how to use their front brake as well as their rear brake, how to set themselves up properly on their bike, proper body position, proper lane position, how to be safe against those those right-hand turns. I mean, accidents happen with that right-hand turn, right?
Yeah, you know? Right, yes.
Yeah.
The blind spot. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right. So those are things that you will learn in those programs is how to use the road to your advantage, how to be predictable. And really what we're saying is in some regards you have to begin to act like a car
right.
and remember
mm-hmm.
that you're still not a car.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right.
Because we don't win that battle.
No, we don't. It's really interesting because a policeman said, well, you know, if the motorists are not respecting you, then you could just ride down the middle. I'm like, yeah, okay. You're not in my neighborhood. I know I have that right, but I'm not going to take it.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah. I was wondering, do you have a few more minutes?
Yeah,
okay, super. And Mr. Vales, when we were talking, I wanted you to talk about, you know, this Velo camp that you started in Las Vegas where you currently reside, and then that was going to be a segue, Anthony, into your talking about the various bike clubs that are here in the San Francisco Bay Area and your work in Minneapolis where you're located with the Mayor Taylor Cycling Club.
Okay.
All right. Where would you like to begin?
Just what is, you know, tell us about your camp that you started, you know, and why you started it.
Well, camp per se, with the Velodrome,
mm-hmm.
It's just basically it's a facility. It's a bicycle facility that's where the Olympic Velodrome used to sit. Now it's an indoor facility, and there's a lot of different entities of cycling groups that youth can actually go. It's an indoor facility,
mm-hmm.
and they have bikes for kids, and they can learn how to ride these bicycles. And so it's designed for, again, as Anthony mentioned, you know, it's one of the many youth programs that are there, and they're online, and you can find them with the proper search
mm-hmm.
To get your kid out after school and do some of these activities. There's a facility in Minneapolis as well, which I think is a great facility. It's a seasonal facility because it's outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, there's group programs there as well for youth and certified coaches. And basically, I promote those nationwide, not just in Los Angeles. It's nationwide.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I was thinking, oh, you know about this other one. Okay. Oh, so you're still traveling like an ambassador.
Yes, in between work, my work is travel. So when I can, I'm there personally. If not, then I'm usually speaking to someone via phone with some questions and some help with directions and
mm-hmm.
learning more as
okay.
I go as
and
well.
What is Velo? What is that?
Velo. Velodrome.
Yeah, what is that?
You have a better explanation for that, Anthony, in layman's terms?
I was going to say, actually, Wanda, what's interesting about it is that the racing that Nelson did, and it was on the track. So the Velodrome are basically bicycle tracks, right? They typically have, you know, they're small. They have a bank usually, but it's a racing facility on the track, and so it's a different kind of racing than we see. But I do think that what we are going to see is a growth in these tracks around the country. Because it is the kind of racing that is great to watch.
Hmm.
And I think that's one of the things that is very interesting about this type of racing, because it is fun to watch. There's a lot of races, different types of racing. There's sprinting. The techniques are very different. And that's where, again, and just in a very interesting way, most of the cyclists that we know, and we think of Tour de France and Tour of California,
mm-hmm.
that cyclist is typically a small, like they're 150 pounds, right? And the challenge is the hills. The Velodrome, and I think why we see the Velodrome is a different cyclist. This is these are cyclists who their ability to accelerate, their ability to maintain speed for short spurts, but there are long races as well. These are powerful cyclists, and I think this is one of the reasons that this type of cycling ultimately is going to be very interesting, exciting for youth. Because it fits many, many more of the physiological attributes that I think our youth have, and I think many people have.
Mm-hmm.
But besides that, it's a great training. It's a great spectator sport, and we have lots of legacy there. And So you, you know, so there are these indoor, these tracks all over the country. California has a number of them.
Oh.
And if anyone can get a chance to see, go to the one of the velodromes in Southern California. I know there's one outside San Francisco. But it's great to watch. It is really a great sport to watch.
Hmm.
And for many of the kids, it's a great cross training. So we're gonna try to use these velodromes, these tracks, to attract urban youth to something that will then be exciting and fun and developmental for them. In addition to doing the road cycling that we currently do using great clubs like the Oakland Yellow Jackets.
Mm-hmm.
So there's really another extension of what we do in terms of cycling.
Oh, okay. Yeah, did you know that there's a current exhibit, Scraper Bikes, Images of East Oakland Youth Culture, at the Eastside Arts Culture Center presently?
You know, I didn't know it was up, but the last time I was in Oakland this winter, I actually met the gentleman from the Scraper Bike Movement.
Oh.
And I've been talking about the Scraper Bike Movement because, again, the Scraper Bike Movement is another one of those manifestations of an urban bike culture.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, it's about creativity and art and expression. And, again, that's just another avenue to attract youth to bikes and the biking lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The photographer is Karna Karata, and the exhibit, it opened in July and it continues through September. So maybe some of the people that can get over to Eastside, which is in the San Antonio area of Oakland, and it's sponsored by Eastside, the exhibit, and the Bikery. Do you know the Bikery? Is that one of?
I sure do.
Oh,
know the Bikery.
Okay.
I spent a little time in Oakland just because it's, you know, riding there and mm-hmm. just being there, but but it's a great city and it's a great biking community, and I don't think people really know that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really, really cool that you know the city as a biker. That's really awesome.
I hear your smile in your voice, dear Wanda.
you really do. That is awesome. Have you ridden the Bay Trails? The various ones like East Oakland, like 66, going out to San Leandro, going out to the Dumbarton. Have you done that?
You know, I haven't done that. I've done a lot. You know, the guys that I ride with when I'm out there, a lot of them are more the performance-oriented cyclists. So I've done a lot of the Oakland Hills ride.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
They're out there trying to beat us up. But I think so this time out there it's going to be nice because I will get to do more of the leisure riding.
Mm-hmm.
And I think and a lot of people I know are experienced cyclists too, so even the routes and things they choose, they're really comfortable being on the street, you know. And they tend to ride in a pair, so they also have the safety in numbers
mm-hmm.
Working with them. And so I've really experienced from in Berkeley and Oakland and Richmond, and even in Davis, where the Bicycling Hall of Fame is right down the street from you. It's right down the street from you.
She doesn't even know that, huh?
No, I didn't know that. No, the Bicycle Hall of Fame,
The Bicycling Hall of Fame is in Davis, so it's right down the street from you. And again, that area is a great, there's so much going on in that community. In terms of different perspectives on how we will get more people on more bikes more often.
Mm, yeah.
So I think I really am excited about it.
Mm, yeah, and it's really wonderful because the public health department for the city, county of Alameda, gives helmets to young people. I think in some programs they even give them bikes. So there is a way for if a child is interested, or the family wants their child to become interested, there's a way for those that don't have a lot of money to get their kid, you know, in the right gear so they'll be safe.
That's right. Well, I think that's part of the thing in terms of even our excitement about, you know, beginning to work with Nelson and the effort he has is that the point is to introduce kids to the bike from many, many different points of entry, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, that's, and I think that, so is it, it may be the touring type riding, it may be racing, it may be racing on the track, it may be social justice, it may be health improvement, it may be transportation, it may be economics. So there are lots of different drivers for why people may do it. And I think that the way that we will have a successful movement, and you really were very specific about this, that you have excitement about seeing Black people on bikes. And so what we are saying is that in order to make this movement happen for us, it has to be inclusive. It has to be very, very committed to outreach and access and making it affordable. Mm-hmm. And that, if we do that, we will be able to create a great movement. And that's really the ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you probably know my good friend Leo Du Bois.
I do.
Okay, He's been like a mentor and a friend and helped me with my children when they were little. Because his Carl's Bike and then Round World on Telegraph is gone now. It was like a place where he brought young people in and taught them how to be mechanics and repair bikes. He gave them jobs. And he was just like, you know, and real central to the founding of the Oakland Yellow Jackets. I didn't even know Angela Davis was a member of the Oakland Yellow Jackets. That's really cool.
Well, I think that one of the things that I say all the time is that most people who bike are closet advocates. And most, or you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That riding the bike itself is an act that advocates on behalf of other people in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Most cyclists are closet environmentalists, right? I mean, they don't preach it, but they really are somewhat a green community. And most environmentalists are closet cyclists, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I remember the early morning, you know, getting up before the traffic sort of built up and meeting over at Lake Merritt and us taking a ride wherever, you know, whoever was leading the ride was going to be taking us. And everybody had on their yellow jerseys and looking like bees. It was really, really
looking fun. Like a team.
Yeah, looking like a team, but also looking like a bee, too, yeah. And being really visible because, you know, that yellow is really, you can see it really well. But and then they did the longer rides, too, and I, you know, sort of came into some new vocabulary, you know, like a SAG truck or whatever. And they were always, you know, really cool because there would be people that would ride, because I had a 3-speed at that time, and there would be people that rode with the people that couldn't go fast. So we didn't feel discouraged and we didn't feel that we shouldn't come. So it was really a really pleasant experience, you know, being a part of that club.
Monica, can I ask me, because I think one of the things that Nelson mentioned, and I think if you look at a lot of the clubs, the National Brotherhood of Cyclists is really a collection of affiliated clubs from around the country of clubs that are committed to increasing access, equity, and participation of communities of color. And one of the things that shows up in many, many of our themes is Major Marshall Taylor. Either there's a club, a racing club there in Oakland called Major Motion. Major Motion. There's a Major Motion in Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
There's Major Momentum in Nashville, Tennessee. There's Major Taylor Cycling in Minnesota. There's Major Taylor Cycling in Columbus.
Hmm.
There's
Major
Iron Riders in New York.
Hmm.
And, I mean, so that Major Taylor shows up over and over. And one of the things Nelson mentioned was Major Taylor. And Major Taylor was the first American-born black champion in any sport in 1899. And the thing that was clear for me was that Nelson was the new kind of, I mean, in 1984, I mean, it was like it had been this huge leap of almost 100 years. I wanted Nelson to tell the story. When he talked about being in Paris and what he the way he tells the story, and I want him telling about retracing Major Taylor's steps in his racing career.
And it's so nice because people in those countries, you know, I raced on the same Paris Velodrome that he raced on years ago. And Anthony, when you look it up in Facebook, my buddy Dominic Soule, he just posted like 3-5 pictures from me racing in Paris back in 1985. I was national champion then. But during those eras, in 1983-85, I met some of the French people, the Parisians, the older generation, that says, do you know Major Taylor? One of those kind of things. Like people says, oh, I remember my great-grandfather used to race with him years ago in this track. You know, and these are generations past. And I had the opportunity to race in Australia where he raced. And it was a promoter that was a big fan of his that promoted an event where I retraced his footsteps in Australia and raced all the different velodromes against all the different area champions in Australia. So that gave me an opportunity to visit Australia, visit the community, and be an advocate then for the Australian youth community as they promoted this champion that was greatly respected in Australia. And this is in the early 1900s, way before your Jackie Robinson and your major league sports of the heroes that we know of today. It was a black man, Major Taylor, that was doing these things.
Hmm.
Interesting enough.
Wow, I never heard of Major Taylor. Wow, this is really phenomenal. So he was born in Indiana and then raised in Kentucky. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, how come we don't know about him? Goodness gracious. Wow.
Yeah, but you know what's funny is, you know, that we don't know about Major Taylor, and I say to you that it was that you the fact that you knew who Nelson Vales was great, because it's the same thing. It's only, you know, you think about 30 years ago, 25 years ago, 27 years ago, it happened, and the last time it happened before that was 1899.
Yeah.
So for us to make that link and understand the historical significance of this, that the bike has always been something that we have been we've excelled at. In 1900, the number of black bike clubs in the United States outnumber the number today. I mean, it's like there were more, and so we embraced the bike. And Major Taylor traveled the world and was the greatest cyclist in the world. He was the Michael Jordan of his time. He was the first sponsored athlete in the world. He got huge fees for appearance fees for being at races and being at events. And again, a lot of that was caused by the racism that existed in this country. But when he went to Australia, when he went to Paris, he was treated like a champion and a gentleman, and it's just really an amazing story.
Mm-hmm. He was very respected in Europe, you know.
Yeah.
And Nelson, I think that's why I think when you were between 1984 and 1994, what was really cool for me to watch as a spectator was watching the news from around the world and watching you travel and see those things happen. Mm-hmm. Because again, I mean, I know you don't really talk very much, but even then, you were one of the first cyclists from this country to really make a living at cycling.
Yes, I was. It's amazing. Before your Lance Armstrong, I was with Greg LeMond when he signed his first $1 million contract. We were both living in Belgium, and I was only making $1,000 a week, you know, and $400 I had to go to my entourage, you know, as payouts, you know. People that cared for me. So, you know, I would take home $500 a week for the races I did in and around Belgium and Holland and stuff like that. But Greg LeMond was living there as well. And we're the only two Americans living in Europe. And this was 1988 I turned pro. So 89 I went to go live with a Belgian family and was received as well as Major Taylor. And a lot of it was because, number one, I was an American. I was a black guy. I was Olympic champion. And I was a nice guy, and all your best pros that are coaching teams today would meet me. This Belgian family would send me 3 km down the street, and I would have to meet a cycling group at a Shell station or a mobile station, and they would take me on these 100-kilometer bike rides, and I'm in awe over these folks. I'm like, that's so nice of you, but come to learn later on, they were in awe of me because I was such a nice person and I was Olympic champion and I wasn't better than anyone else and I was fun to be around, you know. And they would take care of me in the road races, being the only black guy in one of the classic road races. The entire group would take care of me as if they were all my team. You know, hey, you doing okay? Can I get you something? We're coming to a hill. Let's get you to the front because they know I'm going to the back once we start climbing, you know. And it's memorable stories that I'm still trying to find photos and footage of some of this stuff now. Before, it was, you know, it was just everyday living. But now it becomes, you know, a memorabilia to me that I'm collecting these photos. And thanks to Facebook, again, some of these people are popping up with some of this stuff called the Golden Years. Hmm. But, you know, who would have known?
Yeah.
That,
mm-hmm.
You know, and this is the first you're hearing of this, Anthony, I'm sure. So there's so much more to this, and that's why Andrew Ritchie and I got to get together and put this book together before he has to do this research.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he said to me, "You can't wait till you die to do this research. We got to start it now."
Oh,
you know?
Certainly. Yeah, there's so many great stories. Definitely, I'm so happy that you're working on getting yours out there, Mr. Vale, so we can, you know more about you, and then by extension, learning, you know, about about Major Taylor, and it's really interesting. I was just looking online as you were speaking about Mr. Taylor, you know, that he was raised and educated in between 1886 and 1891 in the home of a wealthy white Indianapolis family that employed his father as a coachman, and they gave him his first bicycle. And it reminded me, like in 1892, when he was hired to perform cycling stunts outside of an Indianapolis bike shop, and he wore a soldier's uniform. That's where he got the nickname Major. It's like, oh, that's cool. And he won his first race that year. It was, but that reminded me of like Betsy Coleman, you know, the pilot, how she had to do stunts to be able to afford, you know, her passion. But that was kind of interesting there. And then I was looking at how he, in 1998, he held 7 world records, including the one-mile pace standing starting at 1.4 seconds, like minute seconds. Like, wow, that's fast. And then in August 10th, 1899, it says he won the World 1 Mile Championship in Montreal, defeating Boston rival Tom Butler, and he is the second black world champion athlete after bantamweight boxer George Dixon's title fights, 1890-91. So it's like really cool, sort of like hearing about him, and then how he died like in obscurity, you know? Like nobody knew him when he died in sort of penniless in Illinois. It's like, wow.
Well,
in Chicago. Canada, yeah.
Yeah, and we've actually made a pilgrimage to his grave there.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh.
And so I think there is an overwhelming amount of commitment to rediscovering his legacy and to reconnecting that legacy, particularly to African Americans, but to all Americans.
Yeah.
And I think that's really, he was a great American hero.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the timing was what the timing was, because the bicycle quickly was left behind. But when he was racing, the bicycle was the pinnacle of technology. I mean, you know, all of the great automobile people that we know came out of the bicycle industry. The people in the airline, you know, the Wright brothers who developed the airplane came from the bicycle business.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, the bicycle was the technology of the day in 1900.
Wow.
And that's really what's quite amazing about it. And, you know, I mean, in human achievement. So, again, for us to draw these linkages from Major Taylor to Nelsonville to the Williams brothers now, to the emerging, you know, African and African-American champions, to Team Rwanda. There's a project in Rwanda that's really developing black cyclists and black pro cyclists. So there is an interest and a commitment to the development, increased participation and development of black athletes in the sport of cycling.
Mm-hmm. You know, it'd be really cool if we could have like a sort of a Pan-African ride that starts, you know, I don't know where, maybe started here, and we would cycle the world, hitting all of the African diaspora places, you know. Wouldn't that be really cool?
Well, Wanda, you're a visionary. So you're pumped now. So I think something in this phone call is going to come something great, because the juices are flowing and you're connected on the ground with people. And I think this is exactly it. Is that I think, you know, this is what I think is exciting, is that we can create a collective vision of how the bike becomes a vehicle for change. And people say that over and over and over. But we can do that. We can make the bike a vehicle for change as we improve the quality of our communities, improve our health, right, and improve our understanding of how we are connected to one another. And that is really, that's ultimately what we are working towards.
Mm-hmm. Right. And in closing, thank you both so much for sticking with us for longer than you has expected to. And are both of you all traveling this way, or are you already here, Anthony?
I will be there this afternoon.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So I
just got a flight to catch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm on my way to the airport in a little bit.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I just wanted, Anthony, for you to sort of name the bicycle clubs. You mentioned the Major Motion, Major Taylor Motion. I never heard of them either. The racing clubs. That sounds really cool. But we
yeah,
talked.
You should,
yeah.
Yeah, they're actually sponsoring a big race coming up there in San Francisco, in the Bay Area. But
cool.
Yeah, Major Motion,
mm-hmm.
NorCal is a club right there in Oakland.
Okay.
And of course the Oakland Yellow Jackets
mm-hmm.
That are hosting in this event, and we really they have to put an amazing thank you out to the Oakland Yellow Jackets for making this happen, because they are the reason this is happening. They really have kind of pulled it together,
mm-hmm.
and they are a great club. And their new commitment to development a youth program will be really exciting. And even for people who are listening and are interested in coming to the summit, they should. They can actually go to the Oakland Yellow Jackets website and get additional information. And the website, I believe, is oaklandyellowjackets.org.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll have all the information for them on the event.
Right, yeah. And then you mentioned the Richmond Spokes and Bikes for Life and Red, Black, and Green, and you were talking about sort of the different philosophical angles that these various clubs were sort of looking at biking.
I think that's what's really exciting about the Oakland area. And Oakland, what people don't know, I mean, really, Van Jones emerged out of Oakland. I mean, so there's a lot going on in Oakland around advocacy. And so when we look at ultimately the idea of how do we improve communities, and in the middle of that is the bicycle. And that conversation is going on all over the country. It's happening in Chicago, Austin, Texas, Minneapolis, you know, Detroit. Everyone is figuring out how to make their communities better, and transportation is the middle of that conversation. And the middle of the solutions for transportation is the bicycle. So the organizations like Red, Bike, and Green, Bikes for Life, Richmond Spokes, you know, these are all organizations that are looking at biking, not from the racing and performance angle, but from the social justice, equity, and access angle. And in the human potential development angle. And so it's really a very well-rounded movement, because you've got racing, you've got performance riding, you've got health improvement, you've got youth development, and you've got community improvement and engagement. And that is, again, an amazing, amazing move. And Oakland has got great examples of all of those, including the arts movement with the scraper bikes. So, I mean, it really is it's going to be a great weekend, and I hope people get out and enjoy the opportunity to experience all that Oakland has to offer for cyclists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so if people are interested in can people join the National Brotherhood of Cyclists? Is that like a membership? I mean, for individuals, or do you have to just, or do you? Because I know you're like
you can go. It's the website is www.nbc.org. And you can just sign up and be a part of the community,
mm-hmm.
and which will connect you to cyclists all over the country. If you're traveling, if you have questions, I mean, it really is amazing how many friends that we have met. Of course, Facebook. We have a Facebook site, please go and connect and stay connected to other people. And like you said, that critical mass
mm-hmm.
of people that you're describing on bikes,
yes,
is going to happen on a national level.
Oh, that'd be super. And Mr. Vales, how can people sort of stay posted on how you're coming along with your book and all your other projects, or when you're coming to their town?
As of this weekend journey event, I will launch the NelsonVales.com page. It's not up and running yet, but
oh, nice.
We will begin to launch that, and you just got to stay tuned. So through there, my link will be on all the other pages' links, and vice versa with their links being on my page once it's up and running. But right now, mm-hmm. coming back in the country, because I was living in Dublin and Spain for mm-hmm. the past year. So
oh,
now
nice.
I'm back.
Wow.
And that's from work. And so I'm just starting to launch this project with my publicist and my manager, and thanks to Anthony and his organization,
mm-hmm.
We're going to get this ball rolling, and we'll be back in your town real soon.
Oh, that'll be super. Well, thank you both so much. It's been real exciting talking to you, and I'm really looking forward to meeting you and meeting other bikers and forming some new alliances. And, it's going to really be great because it's always wonderful to have community. And I just see that this National Brotherhood of Cyclists and this conference as being an opportunity to develop and build more community.
That's it, Wanda. And really, what we want to do is that you are making this happen. You're building me. So hopefully we can come back to the show
mm-hmm.
and give you an update in a couple and let you know what's going on.
Oh, that'd be excellent. Yeah, please, please, definitely.
Yeah, all right.
All right.
You,
thank you so safe travels. Oh, you're welcome. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.